What up, peeps? It is the K-Dog. What is wrong with me? Hey, it's Webcomics Weekly, and I've talked about it, I've Twittered about it, and I've hinted at it, but it's finally done and edited. My interview with Merlin Mann. You're going to love it. Here it is. Merlin, I can't thank you enough for making some time for this podunk podcast about cartooning.
Oh, shut up. You're such a big shot. I don't know anything about comics, but I know you're a big shot. So I'm very grateful. I'm grateful that you're interested. It's very cool of you to pretend to be interested in the silly things I have to say.
No, it's a lot. You were kind of integral in my early Mac days. I switched 2 years ago, right when you were just starting all the Mac break stuff and
very cool.
And talking, so all the cool software I use, learn all about Quicken and not Quicken, Quicksilver and all that stuff. I guess that kind of went away, didn't it?
Boy, I tell you, every time there's a new revision, not a revision, but a new release of OS X, I'm terrified that it's going to be the one that breaks Quicksilver.
For finally, yeah.
I don't know.
But it was just an interesting transition that you made recently where and I think it kind of mirrored, coincidentally, and independent of itself, my own transition of going from this discussion of the tools that you mm-hmm. use to make time to just being like, fuck this, I just have to make some time practically and stop worrying about the tools and the minutiae and the talk.
Yeah. That's actually a pretty good summary of how I feel about it, yeah.
And so what really inspired me to call you and say, I've got to talk to you about this, was the podcast you did, it was a live talk, where you were talking with the Brothers Chaps, the Homestar Runner guys, and you talked about community. But what we discussed, the thing about webcomics and pretty much anyone that grows up wanting to make comics is it's such a difficult life to break into. And I'm not even going to say a career choice because I think anyone can do graphic design. But the idea of being a cartoonist and doing something creator-owned that you're going to build up and make into a living and have that life of a cartoonist that everyone dreams about, that's very, very difficult to kind of broker for yourself. And so, but it doesn't keep anyone from trying. I think we're all kind of mentally broken in the same way, everyone that has always wanted to be a cartoonist, whether it's in comic books or be in the newspapers or now the internet, is that you kind of want this life. And so what ends up happening is you try and either you succeed or you don't right away. But what ends up happening is you feel like you're putting all this time into trying and you want to feel like you're making the most out of that time, especially as we're getting older now and starting families and stuff. It's hard to justify the time that you spend doing it. And so I think that, like, when you read Getting Things Done or you look at all these books and products on managing your time, it seems like they're talking to people whose time is spent with spreadsheets. And not with like, you know, for example, if I were to say to you, you know, you're an accountant, all right, let's organize your time. Let's block out your time. So now this is the hour where you do spreadsheets. Well, okay, they sit down and do spreadsheets. But when you tell a cartoonist, now is the hour when you write.
Right.
You know. And so since you have a very creative job and you do a lot of creative content as well, I was wondering if you could maybe give me your insights into what do you do when you block your hour out and it's time to write, and how are we supposed to manage our creative time?
Well, that's a lot of stuff to talk about. You've mentioned a lot of good stuff. So starting with the last thing, here's what's interesting. Well, I guess the second to the last thing. You talked about wanting to be a cartoonist and having some idea in your mind of what you want to do. I think that's really interesting and really complicated, regardless of what it is, because think about it this way. Have you ever met people who say, oh, I knew since I was 6 years old that I wanted to be a lawyer, or I always knew I wanted to be a doctor? And personally, I've got a lot of friends that felt that in their gut, and they went to law school, and they hated it once they became a lawyer. When you say you want to be thus and such occupation, or you want to do this for a living, you're saying a lot of complicated things. One thing you're saying is, I think most commonly people say, this is the kind of person I perceive that I want to be. I mean, at a very abstract level. More specifically, say, well, this is the kind of money I want to make. Or you say, less often, in my experience, people say, well, this is the way I want to spend my day. So if you think about what you just said, there's something, maybe not a contradiction, but there's a little bit of incongruity to what you said, because if you really knew what it meant to be a cartoonist when you were kind of fantasizing about it when you were young, and you knew that there would be a challenge to all that, would you still want to do it?
Exactly.
And I think if the answer is yes, then you absolutely made the right choice. To tie this in with the 43 folder stuff, I think a lot of times, I joke about this, and I call this that, you know, the phenomenon of, you know, buying a beret and thinking that you're an artist kind of thing. The truth is, whatever your work is, it's still work, you know. And if you talk to people who do anything for a living and do it well, the truth is, a lot of folks don't sweat this stuff as much once they do start doing it for a living. Because the people who are able to do, whether it's Excel spreadsheets or comics or blogs or whatever, the people who are able to do it for a long time develop a set of habits and a certain outlook, if you like, on the world and on their work. And like I say, it's a complicated, there's a lot of things to talk about in what you'd ask. But I guess at the heart of it, I think, you know, you have to be careful what you ask for. Because,
yeah.
You know, if you want to be, it sounds like a first world problem, and it probably is. But, you know, every job is hard if you do it well. If you sweat what you're doing, there's always going to be a lot of work to it. I mean, I mentioned this book On Writing a lot, this book I like by Stephen King. And although I'm not a huge fan of most of his novels that I've read, I like some of his short stories a lot. But I really admire the guy, because to him, it's all just a matter of sitting down and working every day. Somebody like Annie Lamott, somebody else I really admire, a writer that I admire, you know, it's hard work for her. It's what she wants to do, but I think the incongruity comes from people thinking they see something or they see what somebody does and they go, oh, it's just going to be this carnival ride all the time. Well,
yeah.
if you're good at it, you're gonna be good at it because you work hard at it. And if you're always pushing yourself to do your best at whatever you do, you know, that's got its time constraints to it and its attention constraints. So, I mean, like I say, there's lots to unpack in what you ask. But at the heart of it, I think that's what it comes down to. It comes down to understanding what it is that you really want to do and asking yourself a question almost nobody ever asks, which is, what do I want to habitually do every day? And will that make me happy? Setting aside the money, setting aside the whatever, quote unquote, fame, success, all those nonsense words. What do you want to do all day? You know what I mean? I think that's what it comes down to. Who do you want to spend time with, if you like?
No, and it's funny that you should mention a couple things in there. One being that once you the difference between the carnival ride that you imagine when you're younger, that the life is. And, you know, interviews about this job can be very deceiving, because when you read an interview, and I did this at a very young age, I read an interview with Jim Davis that was almost at the time a secret interview, because my uncle was a career counselor at a college. And so he had interviews that were given to him by people that did it for the college. This was obviously before the internet, so this was information no one else had. But now those interviews are prevalent. And when someone sits down to talk to someone on an interview about how great their job is, they're not going to talk about what a pain in the ass it is. They're going to talk about how awesome it is. And so there's this misconception, I think, sometimes about the work involved. But that moment for me was when I ran into a cartoonist named Jeff Smith, who's quite popular for creating a seminal graphic novel called Bone. It's a fantasy adventure. And he does more cartoony work than traditional comic book stuff. And I met him when he first got started, and I asked him, look, how do you do this? You know, I want to do it for real, for serious. And he got very angry with me, and he said, look, I'm not going to answer this question anymore, because when I tell people what it takes, they don't want to hear it, and they just brush me off. But it's a lot of work, and there's a business model involved. And if you have to ask me how to do it, then you're not ready, so don't bother. And, you know, of course, I left the comic book signing saying, this old man's full of crap. But he was absolutely right, you know.
He's what he's saying, and I mean, like I've been on both sides of that conversation. Absolutely, I've been ruder than that with other people, and I've been more upset about it than it sounds. I've been on both sides of that. But here's the truth: would you ever walk up to somebody who's, let's say, a physician? Let's say it's somebody that you can empirically say worked really hard and is really smart to get where they are. And do you ever go up to them at a party and go, okay, what's the trick? Seriously, how did you get all rich?
What? Just God, tell me what it is. It's okay. Just tell me. Just tell me. Like you're asking somebody how like you made the leg disappear in the box or something.
Yeah.
And he goes, well, I studying really hard in fifth grade, and I basically there's tons of stuff that I didn't do because I wanted to go to med school, and then I studied really hard and took on a lot of debt. Right? If you would never go to a doctor and go, why are you rich? Or like, yeah, what? You know what I mean? But you would think nothing of walking up to somebody who has a quote-unquote artistic career and going, oh, God, I can't believe what you get away with. And I'm not trying to say in any way that this requires the same amount of training. All I'm saying is that just because, and again, I'm not trying to sound whiny about this. What I'm trying to say is you don't really know what any job is until you spend some time doing it. For example, most of my actual comes from public speaking. So like I do things. I don't know if you've ever seen like the Inbox Zero talk that was on Google. Like I did, do that at companies. And it's been a while. I don't know if this is true. I don't have the numbers behind this, but supposedly Americans, the typical American's second biggest fear in life is dying. And their biggest fear is public speaking. So although I have this really swell life where I get to travel to different corners of the country and speak, for most people that would be a harrowing experience. I love it. Now, I don't like having to do things like think about money. Like, my brain shuts down as soon as I see dollar signs. I'm a terrible negotiator. I just basically throw everything at accountants and lawyers and ask them never to talk to me about it. It's hard. So anyway, that's a rant. But I guess what I'm saying is that the more useful kernel inside of our discussion, I think, is this, which is that if you work your ass off at something, it's going to become really clear to you what you need to do about it. And I think what that dude is saying, I suspect, is if you have to ask me that question, you haven't worked your ass off yet.
Yeah.
Because if you had worked your ass off and you had gone to a lot of conferences and you had listened really well to what other people said and didn't say, you would already know enough about this to know that that's a dumb question. And I think that's what I mean when people say that to me. The same way that like you say, oh, just go, why didn't you Google that before you asked me? Like if you really cared about that, you'd already know the answer.
It becomes a little difficult for us when we do these conventions, comic book conventions, and we meet and greet our fans. And we've written a book on making web comics. Three of my friends and I, there's four of us total. I can
very
do this.
Cool.
We wrote a book on making web comics because when I was growing up, there was a lot of books on breaking into the business if you were interested in print, you know, comic books, comic strips, magazines. But no one's really doing that kind of a book now for the web. No one really understands.
At that time, that must have been like at the very bottom of what do they call it, the nerd hierarchy or whatever. You ever see that?
Yeah.
You know. I mean, but like people who make fun of like people like the Watchmen guy or like John Byrne or something. And then under that, you've got like, you know what I mean? By the time you, like, what are you talking about? You're talking about the early 2000s or something. By the time you get down to guy who draws cartoons for the web, you know, that must have been pretty low status at a certain point.
Yeah, it's almost, and thank God now we're getting just higher than some print comic people because the newspapers are kind of dying off. But like right now, it seems like political cartoonists that are doing
you're finally roughly equivalent with Kathy.
We're getting there. We're trying. Hey, don't laugh. They had the big National Cartoon Society dinner this weekend, and part of the ceremony, part of the festivities, we're going to Kathy Geiswhite's mansion. Indeed.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, that's nothing. I mean, anybody who's doing what they're happy with, I think that's awesome. It is funny to me though. I mean, just to one quick point again, orthogonal to the 43 folder stuff. I mean, what I see you guys doing, I don't have a clue. I have like I have the X-Men omnibus, and I have a Hulk fights thing from about 1978. And apart from that, I don't know anything about comics. I don't know anything about cartoons. I use those terms interchangeably. I'm an idiot. I don't know how to draw. What I will tell you is this: the success of folks like you has everything to do with niche content, and with not giving a fig what anybody thinks who isn't interested. And that's one reason people like you are hugely successful, is you're not trying to go, oh, I want to draw a cat that likes lasagna. Because on the internet, I don't know, today on the web, I'm not sure that would really have much resonance. But what that was, the XCD or whatever, the, you know, the nerdy one that everybody likes, that's giantly popular because it's serving a very specific niche. Or the cat and the dog thing, cat and the girl. I mean, all these things that I barely understand because I'm 42, I do get that they're serving a very specific audience and managing an expectation about what that thing is. Would you agree?
No, I agree 100%. I mean, my comic strip started off as a comic strip specifically about video games. And deep in the minutiae, if you don't play the game, you probably won't understand the comic. And it's grown from that and expanded. But yeah, no, it is all serving the niche. And this is the large argument. You may not be aware of it, Merlin. There's a huge argument, flame war type thing going on right now between syndicated cartoonists and the web cartoonists. Because, oh, yes. It's heated to the point where I've been banned from several websites.
What?
No.
Sound very provocative.
It's been, oh, you have no idea. Listen, there's a lot going on at the bottom of this nerd.
You're always bickering.
Yeah.
You're always bickering.
There's a lot going down at this bottom tier, pal. You're missing out.
No, seriously, that's what innovation is.
It's to the point where I've made a T-shirt.
I'm curious. When you say syndicated, are you talking about like in a college paper thing, or are you talking like for better or for worse? What do you mean when you say syndicated?
By syndicated, I mean any comic strip that's appearing in a newspaper.
So King Syndicate Features type thing.
Exactly.
Like if you're,
Universal Press, King Features Syndicate. The way that it's worked in the past is you make your comic strip, you submit it to them, and then they accept it and take half of profits. And then they handle everything.
What's the crux of the disagreement? Is it basically you guys are going off the reservation in terms of cost and stuff like that?
The crux of the argument is that, the way that I understand it at least, and I'm speaking for these people that disagree with me, is that the model we have of being on the web, the thing that you just complimented me for, is a lie. It's fake. We're falsifying our numbers. We're not making a living. We're kids living out of our basements. They can't adapt to that because they're 50, 60, 70-year-old cartoonists with real salaries and real homes and real bills, and they can't just live this bohemian lifestyle where they make pennies on the dollars, giving their comic away for free when it should be paid for, and we're doing nothing but devaluing them and hurting them, and we're the reason why the newspapers are dying.
Oh, dude. Boy, how much is that particular, some flavor of that? And believe me, I totally see both sides of that, in my opinion. I think I see both sides of that. And I also want to compliment you on the way you frame that. I like the idea of, I like it when people say, well, here's what I see of that, rather than going, let me frame the argument. I'm going to say, this is what I think the argument's about. They might say something different, but I agree with you in terms of, first of all, let me say, I think that's happening in lots of different places right now. If you're somebody, for me, I think about, authors, you think like Stephen King or, somebody like Garrison Keillor. Do you know who he is?
Absolutely. Prairie Home Companion?
If you go Google, let me see if you can find this. Try Prairie Home and then something like legal or copyright.
Okay.
He has. So you've heard a show, you've heard of Prairie Home Companion?
I'm not keen on that one.
But
I have not seen a bunch of it.
You're familiar with the idea of it.
Oh, right.
Basically, almost every phrase he utters on there is a service mark. And I understand. I've got service marks on things. I understand. And I do it for the same reason Stallman does for the most part, which is I don't want somebody else to be able to use it. It's not that I want to keep other people from using it. I don't want somebody else to be able to sell stuff under that and then make it look like it was mine.
Correct.
But why am I saying this? It's just so funny to me because he's so worried about copyright, and he's so worried about, when you're an author especially. An author is somebody who works their ass off for a pretty long time, and like a musician, it's going to take three or four albums, it can take three or four successful books, and then you start seeing some money. I mean, there are people who, that horrible Dan Brown guy. Like, there are people – oh, sorry. No offense if you're a big fan.
No, I'm not. I don't know who you're talking about.
His sentences are really excreted more than written. But if you're somebody who's successful in this old media model – or not old media, traditional media model, it's all based on scarcity. And I apologize if this is a rant that you've heard from me and others a million times, but it's a model that's largely based on sheet music and Edison wax cylinders and piano rolls. And it's this idea that there are N numbers of copies of this, and the whole way that we control the distribution and cost of this is by ensuring that every single one of those is accounted for. And I think the thing is, if your racket involves being really stingy about who uses your stuff, how, and when, I think that's increasingly going to get difficult. And I'm not saying steal, and to me steal means take it to the exclusion of other uses, but I think that's going to get super complicated because people like you and me, let's be honest, we've made a career out of giving stuff away. Sure, I sell stuff. If I hadn't given stuff away, I wouldn't be able to charge companies a bunch of money to come talk to them. You wouldn't be able to put on a conference, right?
No, absolutely not.└If
you charge 2 cents for people to look at your page, you would have made no money and nobody would have any idea who you are.
And I have many subtle levels of how crazy I get about this shit. I mean, listen, I've created comic strip characters that I feel are whole unique, an extension of my personality, which I foolishly like to believe is very unique. And if someone were to take one of my characters and put it on a shirt and try to sell it, yeah, I'm going to have to fight them on that.
But I do too. I do too, but not for the reason people think. But
no,
not, I mean,
okay, I made so a T-shirt. Sorry to interrupt you. I made a T-shirt that was a comment to the nerd Nietzsche about how everyone's kind of moved away from really liking George Lucas and thinking he was God to moving over to new things, right? Because our childhood has kind of been put in question here because the new Star Wars, we don't like it, but does that mean we like the old Star Wars? And here comes a new rising star, Joss Whedon, with Serenity and Buffy and Firefly, and we all love it. And so I made a T-shirt that says, Joss Whedon is my master now. What's happened with that shirt is there's a lot of people also making that shirt on their own.
Right.
And I'll get emails all the time from people saying, hey, someone's ripping you off and selling your shirt. And I say, listen, man, I can't go after some guy for stealing an idea I've practically stole. I mean, I know that it was interesting for me to come up with a notion that we've moved on to kind of our new golden idol, and that I've combined Joss Whedon with a phrase from Star Wars in a clever way, but I'm borrowing from all of these guys to make a point, and I'm not going to get pissy about that. I'm still going to sell plenty of shirts.
It's funny because I had an interview. I apologize to the other guy who interviewed me today because I'm saying a lot of things that I said to him as well. But just like I reached a certain point, now I understand I still have ads on my site. I'll always have ads on my site. But I did reach a point not long ago where I said to myself, I'm not sure I want to be an ad merchant to the exclusion of other stuff. I don't want it to get in the way of stuff that I'm doing. I think in another way, folks like you have to, and it's sort of like I was saying with the Homestar Runner guys, like, do you want to be a T-shirt merchant is the other thing. Because if you are a T-shirt merchant, then you should sweat that stuff. But the thing is, and this is the part that is so hard for a lot of people that are younger and smarter than me even to understand, which is that I'm somebody, and I had a long rant about this after the Wall Street Journal started, All Things D started kind of reprinting other blogger stuff.
Oh, yeah, I saw all of that.
Now, why is that a big deal? I'm Mr. Like, oh, let's go download music and movies, and yet I get mad about that. You know, when ValleyWag, you know, kind of reprints my stuff on their homepage, that makes me mad. Oh, gosh, isn't that a hypocrisy? Well, A, I don't care if it is, and B, it's not. what it is, I don't mind I'm honored and thrilled if you take stuff I've done and pass it around. That's how I got wherever I am right now. Where it gets thorny is if you try and use it in some way that makes it look like we have a relationship that we don't have. That's where it gets complicated. Because now, and I know that
and
sounds
creepy.
Like it is, and it sounds like a distinction without a difference. But it's I'm not persuaded that it is. I don't. People quote unquote stealing my stuff. Well, let's be honest. First of all, the people who quote unquote steal my stuff and steal your stuff are by and large orders of magnitude less well known than we are. And by that, I simply mean that nobody's ever really going to confuse an important concept of mine with somebody else's. So if there's something that I really care a lot about, I mean, I've gotten a lot of my ideas, I won't say from other people, but I've learned a lot from other people. Certainly David Allen has been very inspirational in what I do. Danny O'Brien, even more so. But, you know, if somebody says, oh, I want to go, you know, well, I can't think of a good example of this. But, you know, my feed gets scraped so many times a day. But it's not going to be confusing.
It's the same as someone taking one of my comic strips off my website where it serves my purposes the best, right? If people come to my site to see it. But if someone likes the strip for the day and puts it on their website, that's very different than someone stealing the joke for their own comic or saying it's their comic, you know?
Or, putting it up without attribution. That's what bugs me. I mean, I know that sounds dumb and probably kind of like self-involved, and maybe it is, but you know, somebody made some crack on Twitter not long ago. I was mad because there was this company that was putting things that people said on Twitter onto shirts without asking. And they fixed it, but it was still kind of cheesy. I mean, they're nice guys and they're super smart, great designers, wonderful guys. But you know, that was a boneheaded decision. And I said something on Twitter after that. Somebody's like, oh gosh, boo hoo, people like you enough to put your stuff on a shirt. And I was, you know, people, they take your stupid shit and put it on a shirt. And I was like, believe me, you'll start caring a lot more about who makes money off your stupid shit when your stupid shit gets interesting enough to make money off of.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, that sounds like a really abstract problem until it starts happening to you. And then you go, hey, that's not cool. You know, and that's why I got to tell you, dude, that's why I do not like the word piracy. To me, piracy is like stealing shit from a boat and reselling DVDs, getting stuff off of Torrent and Usenet is not stealing. Or is not piracy. You could call it stealing, but it's not piracy. And to me, that has a really important difference.
That's an interesting distinction too, that you make. I'd never thought about it that way.
Downloading a record and calling it piracy. I've said this before, but calling that piracy is like calling stealing a book of matches arson. I mean, it's really different to me in my mind. And maybe it's just a distinction that suits me because of the way that I operate. But I don't like it when somebody, especially somebody who's got more money and clout and authority and influence and audience than I do, lifts my stuff without attribution or permission. That is what really burns me.
Well, all of it, you know, the piracy. Go ahead.
No, I'm not ranting. You got to shut me down. I'll go on and on.
No, listen, we'll take turns ranting. But all of these concepts, the piracy, the giving it away, the addressing the niche markets, the reason why I want to talk about it so much and the reason why it's just doing the interview with you is in a very selfish way, me taking an opportunity to try to fabricate some excuse to where I can, butt heads with you about it, because I don't want to be a really popular notion is to tell these print and syndicated cartoonists, well, you're the dinosaurs and you're on the way out. Enjoy those buggy whips because we're the new guard. And what I'm saying to all my peers is if you start engaging in that kind of thinking, you're going to feel really stupid when we're the dinosaurs, because that's coming.
And, you're right. I got to tell you the truth. I'm increasingly cognizant of that. And I've added a little bit of subtlety, I hope, to the way that I frame that stuff. I agree with you. It's easy enough to feel like you're the guy who invented the 8-track, and anybody who's still listening to LPs is an idiot. I get that. I think there's a difference, though, between somebody whose business model depends on scarcity of physical stuff versus somebody whose business model depends on habitually doing something interesting, because that is the emerging business model. It's not whether you do one thing and sell it a certain way. It's that if you're careful and good and smart about it, you can evolve with the market. Will tell you what to make, and the market will tell you what to sell, as long as you're awesome at what you're doing. I hope that's the message of what I'm trying to say.
No, that's the message that's coming across to me when I read your stuff. At least the thing that I just get concerned about, and maybe it's just my paranoia, is that we're going to find out 5 years down the road, now that I've invested it, that this emerging business model is the wrong one. You know, that maybe we should have kept things scarce.
They'll all be wrong eventually.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's a good point.
That's Buddhism 101. I mean, don't get too attached to any of this stuff. Well, attached means not the wrong way, but you know what I mean.
No, dude,
I totally feel the same way. And I feel like every day since I started this goofy TypePad account in 2004, and I talked about Quicksilver, and I talked about notebooks, and then pretty soon, I was doing, crappy blogging instead of crappy web development, thank God. But I don't know. I guess I just feel really, first of all, I never want to work for anybody else ever again, unless it really suits both of us. But that's the biggest thing for me, is being my own boss. I'm a terrible boss. I'm an even worse employee. And I at this point, I really can't imagine ever going back to working for somebody else. And I may have to someday, and it may suit me someday. But to me, and so I'm just curious if you agree with this, is like, you know what? If it sinks or floats, it's totally down to you, you know? And that's, I kind of like that. It's existentially empowering.
It is very empowering, and to you rant. I'm gonna bore. Let me bore you with a personal story, because I was maybe 5-6 years into this, and I've been doing it full time since 2000. And my wife and I are driving down this road, and we're discussing her year, her vacation time, because she was taking her vacation time and using it to travel the country with me to these different conventions, to do these signing engagements. So we make a lot of money at these cons selling books in the old scarcity model, where you actually show up and hand someone a physical product.
They're meeting. They get to you when they're doing it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's fan service. It's all that kind of stuff. And all of her vacation time is spent helping me run these booths. And she's sitting here, and she's kind of doing that wife heavy breathing thing as she's trying to figure out where she's going to find the vacation time. And I had this panic attack of, oh, my God, she's going to divorce me. She's going to wake up in a year and say, my whole life can't be your dream. What about my dreams? I wanted to be a marine biologist, but no, we gotta make the cartoonists. And the whole thing is, and I'm having this whole divorce procedure in my head. So I turn to her and I say, Angela, please tell me you don't resent this job. Please tell me you don't resent that I do this for a living. And she, and there was this tense moment, and then she just started laughing. And she said, are you kidding me? Thank God this came along. You were horrible in the business world. You cannot play the game, Scott. You were horrible at it. I was stressing so much when you had a day job. You are horrible at it. You are so much more suited for this. So yeah, I worry about it all the time, which is why I try to get really smart people like Merlin Mann on interviews so I can butt heads with them and exchange ideas and try to...
First of all, this is not far from butting heads. And second of all, that was far from boring. But here's the thing. There's an implication to what you're saying that I have to... I hope you'll agree with, that I take exception with, which is you're implying that there's some security that people with quote-unquote real jobs have. And man, I got to tell you, to me, that's the furthest thing from security. There's so many people right now with a house they can't afford who are making $85,000 a year and going, oh my God, what is going to happen if I lose my job? And I mean, because the nice thing about having a job, and God knows I've enjoyed it, people, most of your health care gets paid for, you know you're going to come in, you know you're going to get a check, you know there's going to be work waiting for you when you get there. And I love that part of having a job. I love not having to think about getting new work. But if you think that's real security, if you think just the fact that you get a check every month is job security, you have no idea. Zeldin said something on Twitter not long ago. He said something along the lines of, all of my job security comes from the fact that I'm unemployed. And by working for himself, he's in a constant mode of looking for opportunities. One thing I can't stop thinking about, the book that I love by Alan Watts called The Wisdom of Insecurity, and it's his typical kind of Buddhist writing, but it's a terrific book, and one of the whole title of the book refers to this idea of saying, the more that you crave security, and the more that you strive to, better put, ensure there's never any insecurity in your life, the more insecure you become. I mean, I know that sounds like dumb Eastern bullshit, but it's totally true. There are not enough locks you can put on a door to keep you safe. And if you think having a job is somehow makes you more secure than somebody who's on their own, well, man, I got to tell you, once you start working for yourself, you're going to work really hard because you never want to have to do that for anybody else ever again. It's so worthwhile, I mean, in my mind.
Well, but listen, man, I got to tell you, I've had that thought. And I've never spoken it out loud, maybe for fear that, for the same reason stand in front of a mirror and say Candyman. Just the idea that job security is an illusion, you know. But if I say that out loud too many times, I'm going to end up at a convention where some guy comes up to me and says, hey, I quit my job because of something you said in your podcast and it did not work out for me. And then I'm going to be, then I'm going to feel awful. But
I see what you're saying.
I'm in a position where I'm also... I've got two jobs here. One of them is making my content, and one of them is a side project where I try to, in the quote, air quotes, give back and talk about the process of making comics for people that want to do this and do what we want to do and kind of freak out about it. That's why we wrote the book. We have webcomics.com because there's so many people that want to be a cartoonist and feel that desire and don't know how to go about it. And I remember that feeling when I was trying to get started.
Let me embarrass myself by just asking. So, you know that Scott McCloud book, I'm sure, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Is it something like that? I mean, like, I know that's probably really dumb for me to ask.
Not dumb for you to ask at all. As a matter of fact, Scott McCloud has written three of those books. The middle one was kind of bad. He even admits that. But
it's about Understanding Comics. I think that's the one I've got.
Understanding Comics is the one that you probably have, and it's the one that's been around forever. That's really about more of the form. And the third book he wrote, Making Comics.
I never realized how many conventions of comics I never even realized were there until I read that. It blew my mind.
It's an incredible book. I think it blew everybody's mind. McCloud was a game changer for a lot of people. I mean, he was there in the 80s when the only jobs there were in comics were work for hires, and you had people like Stan Lee and Jack Kirby creating characters that would never make him any money. And he stood up with a bunch of the independents and did this Creator's Bill of Rights, and it really kind of helped people in comics learn they could create these things. They don't need these large media companies. They can be their own bosses. They can keep their own properties. And they can make the money when the movie's made, you know? And McCloud was at the forefront of that. So I have nothing but mad respect for Scott, even though he and I have really disagreed on a lot of things. Scott was big pushing the micropayments when webcomics first started.
Don't you think all that stuff? Can't the farmer and the cowman be friends in some ways? It seems like...
to me, this goes to your point. I think the bigger point that I perceive you making. And so, you know, one reason that I'm kind of really bored with the internet at this point is all of the mutual exclusivity people try to imply about everything. Well, here's the thing. I'm not saying you should quit your job. I'm not saying you should keep your job. I'm not saying you should get excited about comics. I'm not saying you should not. I'm saying that there are certain things that tend to work for all these things, that there are relationships that can work between all of these things. And it's really, there's never been a greater time to decide what kind of blended approach you want to take to some of this. If you want to sell some of your stuff, give some of your stuff away. Do you know what I mean? There's so much flexibility to how you can approach almost everything.
Yeah, why are we picking sides?
That's, well, sometimes it matters to pick a side, and then other times it's just what Freud, I use this phrase all the time as a joke, but it is actually a real thing, the narcissism of minor differences, which is just the idea that the more identical I become to the people in the next village, the more I hate everybody in the next village. You know, for a lot of bonehead stuff, but that, in my experience, is what the internet is all about. It's all about finding, especially in America, if you're an American, it's very important that you find out the one way in which you're very, 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 very slightly different from other people, and then loathe them. And I think that's what happens. It's easy to forget that we share, like, you know, how much of our DNA do we share with chimps, you know? And yet we argue over, like, you know, whether the Hulk's pants should get, you know, bigger or whatever. I don't know.
One of the favorite phrases in this lower niche rung that we discussed earlier is, it's just like university politics, the fighting's so fierce because the stakes are so small.
That's Kissinger. Yeah,
we say that all the time. Hey, listen, I know we're discussing time stuff. I don't want to take up too much of yours.
And I don't have another interview for an hour, so just put it.
Oh, good. Well, I wanted to touch a little bit on this comment you made about communities, because PvP, the website, my comicship has grown to the point where I've had to take off all comments and remove the forum from my site. And absolutely.
Was it too much work to moderate, or was it just too malignant?
A little bit of both. There was two things happening. All right, when you have the first thing that I was discovering was when, especially with the comments, is any guy that just wanted to be a complete nutter a-hole saw an opportunity to have his comment one page away from the homepage of a very popular, what he perceives to be a very popular site. So you would have people coming in and using those comments just to crap all over me or anything for that matter. And it was upsetting the readers who aren't that of that mindset. And right. I couldn't figure out a way to quarantine the bad away from the good without just being 100% involved in it every day. And it would just take up too much time. But the other thing that I had to separate myself from was, and maybe this is a psychology thing I need to see a therapist on, is that no matter how ridiculous the claim from a hater, there's a part of me that says, shit, what if he's right? And it was becoming counterproductive to making the comic.
Yep. I hear you on all counts. I mean, first of all, I mean, like, we should round back around to that. I think you're referring to what I said when I was at that convention with Jesse, what I said about community.
Yeah.
Well, let me throw out one concept that obsesses me right now, just because it's obsessing me, and that is the idea that I think it's important to understand. Talking about especially attention management, I really like the idea of saying, "Well, how do I identify the sources of where my attention goes that tend to yield good versus bad results?" And I'm not talking just about like positive thinking, but you know, how do I know when I've discovered a place where I tend to get things that positively affect my behavior, my thinking, my cognition, versus what are things that I keep checking over and over that have a negative effect? Does that make any sense? Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So for me, like, the homepage for CNN.com always makes me mad because I think it's depressing and dumb, and I think it's deliberately made incredibly stupid and provocative just for the purpose of making people reload it. So I don't look at it anymore, and I'm happier. Because you know, there's a phrase that you never don't really start using until you're a parent in your 40s. There's a phrase I hear a lot of people my age who are parents say, especially when referring to things like sexting. And that phrase is, "There's no good that can come of it." There's some things in this world that can go either way, and there's some things where there's just no good that can come of it. So first of all, let me just say, like, you have to ask yourself, you know, for whatever it is that you're making or whatever it is that you're consuming, can good come of it? And I think as far as community stuff, absolutely. good can come of it. But you also have to say, at what point does this become something that becomes just a rabbit hutch? It's something I'm just attending. It doesn't make me happy, and it's getting in the way of other things that I do. Most of my friends had more than enough information to know who they wanted to vote for in the last election, and yet they reloaded, you know, 24 pages on the web 50 times a day and worked themselves into a froth, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you have to ask, again, who do you want to delight with this stuff? And I'm sorry to hear you say that, though, because it seems like you could have a really rich community, but it's almost like Wikipedia, where if you're going to have a community, you either need to have moderators, preferably paid moderators, or you're going to have so many people involved in a /dot or dig-like moderation that there is a certain kind of skin in the game for saying stuff that's dumb.
Yeah. You know what I replaced it with was Twitter. Not to bring up that word.
I'm not like that. I think Twitter's swell. You're saying at responses become a way for people to follow conversations.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, one of the things that people hate about TweetDeck that I love about it is how much real estate it takes up on my monitor, because I've got one monitor.
Is that the Air?
Yeah,
is that Air?
That's the Air app. Yeah, it just makes a bunch of columns, right? Every column for what you want. So
I see. That's kind of crazy and interesting.
Right.
It's like
right.
A giant dashboard, right?
It is. It's almost, yeah. I mean, you could, if when I'm on my laptop, it takes up the whole damn page. I've got to enable spaces. But when I'm here at work, I'm drawing on my Cintiq, the Wacom that's the monitor, and then to the left, the Cinema display. I just have it over there. But it's instant. It's an instant community of back and forth. And since I'm doing at replies, people that are watching me respond to someone else can then go and follow that thread if they want to. So I really feel like Twitter for me has replaced that forum.
Isn't that interesting? And it's also gonna demand that people bring a little bit. The thing I really love about Twitter that hasn't been screwed up by everybody yet is this idea of the brevity. I mean, I haven't done anything with it, but I recently bought the domain name Twitter Email because I love the idea of having a day where we all try to write our email as if it was Twitter. We all try and write, to the extent possible and reasonable, try to write in 140 character messages at the longest. Or I guess 160 with proper SMS. But do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Do you know what I mean? So like, and there's no bling. There's no giant picture that people love. There's no like elliptical from a Joss.
Seriously, Whedon, it's great. Thing. There's no stupid animated GIFs of a Next Generation scene where Picard and Riker are replaced with McDonald's guy. And it was exactly. I mean, I downloaded a Twitter app for my laptop. To maybe have less real estate taken up, and I wasn't paying attention and to my character count, and I hit return, and it said, "This Twitter is too long. Would you like to post it anyway with twitterlonger.com?" And I thought, what a horrible idea. No.
I want to just clarify one thing. There's a couple things that are important to understand. So just so we clarify for folks who are skipping past all the other parts of this, is that so you were referring to a panel that I did with Jess Thorne.
Specifically it was the comment you made, and it would really just, because people always get mad at me that the forums are down, and that, you know, I mean, my forums went down one time, and I decided, you know what, let them stay down. And you would have thought that I had killed people publicly. But what you said was you can't just throw up a forum and then walk away from it and say, there's my community, because that's just shit.
I just,
you know.
Right. Well, I just want to just clarify, just know why, where this is coming from. First of all, that was a public radio conference in Atlanta, and it was a public renology conference. And so Jesse Thorne hosted this panel, and it was me and the guy who wrote Adult Swim site. He wouldn't say he runs it, but he's kind of he's a producer at Adult Stuff. And then the guys who do Homestar Runner, who I know from Tallahassee and Dance Together and stuff. And so just to understand it, the reason why am I telling you all that? Well, first of all, it's just important to understand that we were there at this conference to bring a certain angle about to a group that's not, these guys are super smart, but there's a lot of limitations to being in public media. There's a lot of limitations, especially if you want to try and make any dough out of it. So we were kind of there to go, hey, there's all kinds of things you can bootstrap to figure out what your unique value proposition is, if you like. But second, and this is the super important part, is public radio and public media in general is hurting right now in a lot of ways. Because to quote Homer Simpson, you know, to paraphrase Homer Simpson, a lot of that's already being done better on basic cable at this point. And the revenue streams are thin, And the kind of member stations are really struggling to figure out who they are and how they're going to stay alive. And here's the thing. There are all of these carpetbaggers out there, all these social media douchetards that are walking around giving people unbelievably bad advice about how to use social media. Now, I'm not good at social media. I'm a dick on Twitter, for example. But I will tell you this, and this is the context for my comments, is that it is not a special sauce to just add social media. And to your point, and I'll let you finish the thought, but the important thing to me is you don't just turn on comments and you don't just start a forum and then expect that to become this great source of page views and, sponsorships and stuff. You're basically creating a new job. It's not just a free PR and marketing thing. It's a new job. You've just created a new job position. And so that's really the point I wanted to get across, was to say to these guys, hey, do not listen to these idiots. You know, I personally, I'll just say for myself, I listen to public radio and I watch public TV because they have the resources to tell complicated stories when they choose to. I don't listen because I want to know what some idiot thinks about a controversial issue. Anyway, that's all I wanted to say. And so the difference was, though, what you're talking about, and this is why I'm disappointed, Scott, is it seems like you should be able to have a legitimate community in the true sense of the word, where your avatar equals you equals your words. And yeah. In my experience, people do, like on Metafilter, well, for a while anyway, people do behave a lot better when they have that skin in the game. And that is community versus just turning on comments on a newspaper site.
No, I understand that. And it's not that, maybe it's just because I'm a dick, but no, and let me clarify that. It's because what was happening to me, especially with the comments, was I was learning that what was this wonderful expression of my thought, which was my website, my comic strip. This is what I think going out. If you want to say what you want to think, start your own goddamn comic strip and blog, and then I'll come read your thing.
Yeah, go shit on your own couch.
Exactly. What was happening is that I would put up a thought or a comic strip, and then I would spend my day defending it. And it's like, who asked you here? And this is an interesting discussion that we got onto in our own podcast, Merlin. And you can tell me how you feel about this. And maybe this is the height of hubris on my part, or egotistical. But what happens is, if you get any type, and my friend is doing a book on micro-celebrity. He's writing a book on what he called this term of micro-celebrity. I mean, I know that in the big scheme of things, I'm not a celebrity, but in that bottom rung niche audience that we're talking about, I have garnered some quasi-celebrity status.
And right. I tell my family, it's a piece of the pie, but it's a very, 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 very thin slice.
Yeah, I'm world famous in Poland.
I'm amazingly famous among 1,500 people.
Yes, exactly. and what ends up happening is, I think there's this thought process of someone posting on my blog, my comments, or in a forum, where there's this moment where they decide they'd really like to get to know me, but they immediately become aware, subconsciously, of the futility of that it probably won't happen, and if it will happen, it won't be real, and that a nice comment going out is probably going to get lost in a flood of nice comments. Mm-hmm. And so what they do is at the last minute they decide, well, if I really want to be noticed by this guy, I'll insult him. Then he'll engage in me. And then we have a relationship. Now I'm the guy that stands up and goes, PvP, whatever. I'm the guy telling you that it sucks. Right. And, you know, and that gets, you know, that garners some attention, because I can't tell you how many times I've gotten an email from someone who is giving me a breakup letter about why they're not reading my strip anymore and why I don't have my business anymore. And then when I write them back...
I get emails from people, and I hate to make fun because I'm grateful that anybody likes anything I do, but it is kind of funny to me to get an email from somebody who says, A, I love your new direction of talking about having a smaller yield of work that's higher quality, and B, I really wish you'd post about it more often.
It's hard not to giggle at that. But I understand where you're coming from.
Let me give you a possible paradigm for understanding this, because this is the paradigm that has helped me understand this. I do not know if this is reality, but it's how I see the internet, for better or for worse, and because it's a way that helps me cope, and it's a way that helps me stay centered about it. So I think what you're describing being that, you know, it's sort of like that frat boy thing where you're either going to, like, have butt sex with the person or punch them. You know, I think there is an element of that, of what you're describing. I think what's more likely to happen, though, is think about what we just said. Think about what we said about forums. People love the bling. Think about MySpace and putting up all the embedded stuff. Think about Twitter and trying to get on favored, and so on and so on and so on. If you see the internet as a medium for personal publishing or a medium for civil debate or whatever. It's kind of there, but to me, the best way to understand the post-Web 2.0 internet is to understand that it's about forming a personality and evolving that in public. And if you like, kind of brushing your beautiful long hair in public. And so think about this instead. Think about, do you have an iPhone?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so do you ever see any of the iPhone app reviews on the iTunes on the iTunes store?
Yes, exactly. I mean, yeah.
The vast majority of reviews of every app are one star. I'll tell you this. If you ever want to read a good review on Amazon, look for 2- and 3-star reviews. Because very few people who are, most of those are the better reviews. The closer you get to the middle, the more well thought out it is. Okay, why am I saying this? Because your personality is formed by saying what you like and what you don't like, what you reject and what you accept. And on the web, to be iconoclastic and to be snarky, almost reflexively, that's kind of become the default way to be, especially if you're like a comment-leaving guy. So, you know, a lot of times when somebody, first of all, when somebody writes me some big flame about how I'm doing it wrong, what I hear inside of that is that they care, and it's just not the thing that they wanted. So that's how I try to read that. If I get a really nasty note from somebody, or for that matter, a really nice note, I mean, I can't tell you how many notes I get from people that are like, man, I feel like you saved my marriage with Inbox Zero, because now it's great. Or like, you look nice today, it's really weird, I don't understand it, but I like it. That makes me feel good. If somebody says to me again, I love this stuff you write, but do it more often and do it in this way, I hear my own voice as the young person. Think about you in comics, and think about somebody who like took a direction with the character that you didn't like. You have emotional investment in that.
Yeah.
Now, the
yeah.
trouble is, on the web, there's very little skin in the game for doing that in public and badly. And I think most people would probably take down a lot of dumb things they've said after a week if they could. So I guess what I'm saying is, if you instead of seeing it as a strictly personal attack, they're attacking a cardboard cutout version of you that they have in their basement. But I do want to understand why people say what they say. And you know, there are certain things to me that are red flags. I'm just going to be brutally honest. Anything from Hotmail.com or AOL.com, boy, that gets a really different reading.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anything that's largely a bunch of links to other stuff the person's done, you know, think about how many comments on your site are either some attempted takedown or ass kissing. If you took off all the comments that aren't a takedown or ass kissing, there's very, very few comments left on the web.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a bunch of people pissing on other people's snow. And, you know, they're not making anything. They're just trying to form a personality by throwing grenades around. So, you know, I think it's a shame. And I think there are strategies you can do online to make your community work. Again, something like Metafilter, even with the wonderful moderators they've got, it's just become too caustic for me. I can't even read it anymore. But you can also do things like, were you using, what were you using for form software? Were you using that really popular one, the PHP one?
PHP.
Bulletin?
Yeah, or V-Bulletin? Something like that. Either V-Bulletin
Have you seen, ever seen Tacky Goes to Coventry bit that you can flip?
No, what's that?
Are you familiar with that? Oh, it's a crazy term, but I might have first seen it in PHP BB, but it's a bit you can flip called Tacky Goes to Coventry. So if somebody's being a jerk, this is passive aggressive, but to me it's more honest than disemvowing. You can say to somebody, first of all, to me in a community, if somebody's being a dick, you go offline with them. You don't argue in public. You never argue in public with anybody. It's like, you know, wrestling with a pig. But if you go offline with somebody and say, hey, look, I don't know if you're having a bad time, you know, but you're kind of being a bit of a jerk, you know, and you're saying things that are really inflammatory, you know, is there anything we should talk about here, you know, and try and be a man about it. But if somebody's continually being a jerk, you can flip a bit so that they see their posts, but nobody else does.
Oh.
And it's awful, but it's kind of funny, and it's one way to say to somebody, especially if you only do it for a few days. But I mean, to me, things like what Boing Boing does with disemvowing, I think that's execrable. I think that's just embarrassing. You know, you either edit or you don't edit. Either delete it or you don't delete it. You don't make somebody wear a funny hat on your own site. You know?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's a shame though, dude, because you've got such a large following. Have you thought about getting some volunteer moderators?
I have.
So is it more that it hurts you? Is it more that it hurts your feelings, or is it more that it really is a time sink?
oh, well, if I had to think about it, shit, I might as well just admit that it hurts my feelings. You know,
why does it hurt your feelings?
I work really hard at this shit, Merlin.
I'm not accusing. I'm just asking.
I was trying to be funny there.
What's the voice in your head that you hear when somebody goes, you know, you're a dick? What is the thing that makes you feel bad? Like the triggering kind of thought for that? It's like fraud. You feel like you're not talented. You feel like you're disappointing people.
No. It's not that. I think it's more the fact that if I was trying to, I think that if I was trying to make something, like I think if I was trying to falsely be cool, and I think we've all read that kind of stuff. We've all read it, content, whether it's comics or blogs or whatever. That's very Mary Sue. I mean, I've always kind of worn my heart out on my sleeve, and I've tried to be very genuine and honest with what I write. And whether that's in the comic or in the blog. And so there's nothing that I write that's not super personal. There's always a little bit of me in it. And I guess when someone comes in and says, you know, your comic was shit today, you know, nice try. Right. It just feels like that comment does not merit what happened. If you come, I mean, listen, my wife has sat and listen to my brother and I tear apart episodes of Star Trek. I mean, we're huge Star Trek fans. And we tear them to pieces. We tear them to shreds. Right. And then she says, you know, if I didn't know any better, I would think you guys didn't like this show, the way that you talk about
right.
it. And I know that. I try to apply that kind of same thought to what I'm seeing in my comments. But it doesn't feel like that's what I'm getting sometimes. It's not so much of a, well, why don't they just beam a bomb onto the ship and then blow it up that way? You know, and then it's like, all right, let's watch another one. It's more of a, hey, nice try, you know, trying to please me today. You didn't, and I just wanted to take the time to let you know that you once again failed at pleasing me, and I'll be back tomorrow to let you know.
Can I say one thing, though, just for you? I mean, like, it doesn't matter to me one way or another whether you have this forum. Personally, I think forums are generally pretty stupid. Sorry. But here's something for
no,
you
I
to
agree.
Think about.
I agree with that.
Well, you're a very creative, smart, and communicative guy, and you are very creative. And one of the problems of being a creative person is you can create problems for yourself. And it's one reason creative people tend to procrastinate more. And all I'm going to say is that you are, maybe fairly, maybe unfairly, you are imagining in your head that the people who say stupid shit about you are as smart and happy and well-adjusted as you are. And I'm not trying to do a slam here, but I'm just being dead honest. Sometimes people are drunk. Sometimes they're having a bad day. Sometimes they just need to go take a swing and yell at the TV. And so just for what it's worth, and I hate to sound condescending. I hope you take this in the spirit it's intended. But you don't listen to those people because you have to ask yourself, like, again, some of it's an attention management issue. What would you change? I mean, are there people who say things about you where you go, oh, I think that's true? Or is it just that they're hitting a soft spot? Because that's what they're trying to do. And they're trying to derive some kind of feeling of like feeling alive by doing stuff like that. And you must not swallow that just because they offer it to you, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, for myself, I don't like it either. I don't like people saying mean things about me. But, you know, on the other hand, that's what's going to happen. And, you know, part of getting good at this stuff is not just having a thick skin, but learning who you should listen to. And that is where it gets really hard. And if I can say, it's true of email, it's true of news, it's true of whatever you need in order to do your job, you're going to have to develop a certain kind of filter. So all I'm saying is just be careful that you don't want to shut down, you know, to all the input coming in because it shouldn't all affect you. It only needs to affect you at the point of processing, and then you decide what to do about it. But I think one of the things that gets people so wrapped up with this stuff is, I'm putting this really badly. A lot of people who feel like they're very productive or feel like they're very efficient or technologically evolved have really found out have created a highly tuned environment in which they can endlessly procrastinate with a very high level of efficiency. That's what a lot of this stuff is. So getting a super tuned, you know, whether it's your Bash profile or whether it's your setup for your web browser. In your case, right, you had this perfect machine for making it easy for you to ego surf.
Yeah.
And I think the trouble is when we try to develop expertise about the wrong things, we shouldn't be surprised if we get bad results. And that's, to me, that's what the Inbox Zero stuff is really ultimately all about. It's not about email. It's not about your inbox. It's about making excellent decisions about how and when you need new information in order to do what you do.
I mean, you at least have to vet. Did I just say that word right?
I think so. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, actually, in some ways, this goes back to your forum thing. And again, I don't hate to do this, but I do tend to always think about this stuff in terms of attention management. And like I said on that panel, you know, if you open comments, you not only have a certain obligation to read them, but you have a certain obligation to do something about the ones that people feel really strongly about. Kind of, really. You know, if you're going to ask people their opinion, don't be surprised when they tell you.
Yeah.
And if you ask a lot of people their opinion and they all agree, well, then it's going to start to seem kind of crazy if you're not doing what they all want. So, again, to me, that's an expectation to manage. I think here's the other thing. If you want to get it's very, very difficult, in my experience, to get good criticism from almost anybody. Because, first of all, nobody wants to hurt your feelings if they're a friend of yours. And on the other hand, you know, there's all kinds of things having to do with, like, you know, the color of your crystal or envy or whatever that leads people to say, you know, stupid stuff. So to me, if you want to get good criticism and it matters to you to get good criticism, ask people that you respect, frame it in terms of what you can sort of stand to hear at what level, and then take it like a man. And specifically also ask very specific questions. Never say to anybody, did you like that thing I did?
Yeah.
You know? I mean, let's think of it this way. If I came up to you and I said, you know, what's your favorite thing I've ever done? Then you're going to go, oh, whatever, blah, that one thing. But if I went up to you and I said, boy, if you were me and there was one fairly easy thing that I could do a little bit differently that would really improve my work, boy, how much better of that of a question is that to ask?
Yeah, that's a good point.
So you know, again, you've got to have your own, you know, tolerance for what you want to hear and what you're going to do about it. And but I'll tell you, having a relationship with somebody where you can have that kind of conversation in a really honest way, oh, it's so giant. I mean, I have a few handful of friends like that where I can really say, well, did I do something dumb here? Was this good? Should I have done it this way? And they'll tell me. So,
yeah.
I mean,
no, it's huge.
Have that makes me have a tolerance for a bunch of dumbasses going like, you're doing it wrong. You know, not dumbasses. I'm sorry. That sounds unkind. But some people are dumbasses. I mean, I'm not going to make any apology.
No, also, but, I mean, I'll say dumbasses because
Well, I don't know. I'm probably carrying on.
Well,
I don't mean to give you an unrequested pep talk, but I do.
No,
I
appreciate the pep talk.
Let me leave you with one tiny thing then also, which is, I guess, maybe a long overdue summation of a lot of nonsense I've been trying to say for the last however long, which is that in thinking or overthinking any piece of this, be careful that you don't lose the people you really care about, including you. So the problem is when you start, not you, but when one starts listening too much to all of these voices, it's like Annie Lamott calls it like the jukebox with the greatest hits of your failure playing all the time. Like when you listen too much to the hopefully minority of people who think you're doing it wrong, I would say, A, man, don't argue in public about it. That's the people who really respect you, when they see you lowering yourself to have some kind of argument about like whether you used "oh really" right, like in my experience, just for myself, this is just for myself, like that's a big turnoff. It's a big turnoff to watch somebody you respect bicker. And then second, that's just my opinion. Second, though, and more importantly, is don't listen deliberately or unintentionally. Don't over-listen to people in a way that's going to cause you to change what you do, and listen to the people who really do care. Nixon once felicitously called the silent majority. You know, don't put off the people. You never know when somebody awesome stops following what you do because of some reason. And it would just be a shame if people who are really ardent followers of what you do went away because you'd done something that some dumbass thought you should do. That's all I'm saying.
Well, Merlin, God damn it. Thank you so much for coming and talking to me. It means a lot. And
I appreciate it. I've really enjoyed it. I'm sorry I ended up, you know, ranting so much, but
no,
it's been
a
real
thrill. No, that's what I wanted.
And you make me want to go look at this little world of yours now. I'm very curious.
You should check it out. More. You're going to, just like anything else on the internet, you're going to have to weed through some stuff that makes you go,
what's your favorite comic you've ever done that somebody like me could see and would be less confused by?
Today's.
Okay. That's a great answer.
Yeah. Listen, I wish I could say that every day, but today's is really good because it's kind of a one-off. It doesn't involve any characters that you would need some kind of history with.
Look at those dogs. Oh, those are cute dogs.
And there's a post of dogs below that. Yeah.
at that, cutie pies. Yep. Wow, look at that. That's pretty. Do you do one of these every day?
I do. I used to do it 7 days a week. I've cut back to 5 days a week. And
holy
I started
crap.
Doing
them in color. You draw this in a day, though?
It takes me about an hour.
Oh, my God.
Hour.
Ugh. Yeah. God, that's amazing. I really envy that.
Oh, thank man. You, man.
Jeez Louise. Well, anyway, thank you. And I hope you can use some of this.
I'm putting the whole thing up untouched. Trust me, Merlin, the people listening to this are people at home that are going to be drawing for the day, and they want something to listen to while they draw, and they're going to love it, and you're going to give them a lot of food for thought, and it's awesome, and I won't waste your time by adding all the stuff. Well, I'll just do it so you know that I did it, but you can find Merlin's stuff at 43folders.com, and also, are you still doing fives?
Yeah. I finally did an update not long ago. You can do stuff at merlinman.com. My favorite thing that I do right now is a podcast called You Look Nice Today.
Oh,
so if you Google You Look Nice Today, you'll find it. And it's weird, but I like it a lot.
I
do it with Scott Simpson and Adam Lissagor, Lonely Sandwich, and I like it a lot.
I tried to become best friends with Adam by doing a cartoon of him doing the fish stick.
Oh, nice.
Did you ever get to see that? No, I didn't pass it around.
No, I haven't seen that, but Adam's a very, very nice guy. He's a very nice
guy. You guys, that podcast kills me.
Thanks, man.
Nice today. No, it's the best.
Adam does all the work. There's a lot of editing.
You do that. You're the one that turned me on to the call recorder where you all do your different parts and then someone edits it all together. Yeah, that's a horseshit job. So pat Adam on the back. Give him a hug the next time you see him. All right, Merlin.
Well, listen, I hope we'll be internet friends now, and I hope I'll talk to you again.
Absolutely.
It's super cool. Me to do this.
Yeah, if you ever need a cartoon for your site or anything.
Wait a minute. Easy there. Yes. Oh, totally. Yeah. Okay, we should talk about that.
Yeah.
Let's not do it
email
now.
Email me.
Do another thing. No, but I'd really enjoy that. And thank you very much for doing this. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you, Merlin.
My friend.
Take care.